Welcome in to this edition of the Blanket Coverage Podcast. It is the night before draft night. The NFL draft starts tomorrow, Thursday, April the 23rd. We are pumped for the first round. We're going to have a mock draft coming out tomorrow. But for now, we are clearing up what every team needs to do this offseason. Talking about off-season moves, talking about next season for some of the better teams in the league. We're finishing our NFL exit interviews segment. I'm Bill Parker in Nashville, Tennessee, joined by Jack Wallace from Atlanta, Georgia on FaceTime.
Yes, sir. Always a pleasure.
And today we are going to be, we're going to be talking about the Seahawks and Ravens, but we're mostly going to be bullying the Texans. And that's what's going to come up first here. I was going to let you take this, but I just can't help the chance to bully the Texans a little bit. The Texans went 10-6, good for first in the AFC South. And once again, they blew it, because they made the wild card round, won a thriller of a game. I guess you could call it that. It was really one of the worst games of football I've ever seen, but we'll leave that. In the past, against Buffalo, they won in overtime 22-19. And then, of course, blowing a 24-0 lead against the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, I can't talk much because the Titans also blew a lead against the Chiefs, but at least it wasn't 24-0. And at least Bill O'Brien's not our GM.
Now, I am aware that now both of us and the Texans all do have issues with blowing leads. We all are very painfully aware of that. But this one was still pretty bad because this came from a team that had most of the rights to win, had the team in check, had a team that was pretty inarguably better with the Kansas City Chiefs, better and completely in check. 24-0 is a ridiculous lead. And again, only 1 point off from what the Falcons had a few years back on the day we choose not to remember. And yes, it was pretty disastrous for this team. But at least on some positive things for the Texans, they did still win the AFC South, which is turning into more of like a shiny button of a prize more than an actual trophy, but it still gives them credit because, you know, if you're 10-6 winning the division,
you did it.
It's always been kind of that division, which again, it is improving. I think next year overall will be a better division, but maybe not the Jaguars, but maybe an overall better division. Looking at some of the other best moments, the trade for Laremy Tunsil and Kenny Stills from Miami really wasn't a bad move. Stills is a solid wide receiver. Tunsil was a lot of that desperately needed offensive line positioning. He's a very good tackle, and I think he did help this team out a bunch and will continue to. And just, of course, Deshaun Watson. I think it's very difficult to argue that in 2019 and then for 2020 that Watson, I couldn't see how you could say that he's not a top five quarterback at this point. I think that, in my opinion, I definitely see Mahomes and Jackson over him, but I don't really know who would I put above Watson at that point. Playing at least right now, it'd be difficult for me to say many guys above him. So Watson was one of the best picks Houston's ever had in the draft out of Clemson and is really just absolutely electric. Overall, looking at Pro Bowlers and AP All-Pro, I actually forgot to list these out on the script, so I'll just look these up. And there are three Pro Bowlers on this team. Deshaun Watson, of course, at quarterback. DeAndre Hopkins at wide receiver, which we'll have plenty to say on in a minute. And then Laremy Tunsil, offensive tackle, of course, getting from Miami, so ended up being great for them. And then D-Hop getting first-team AP All-Pro. Keep that in mind when we keep talking about him. So, first-team All-Pro. And would you like to go over some of the other negatives of this? You said, of course, blowing the lead was a big one, but there actually is one worse than that. There is one worse.
Oh, 100%. Bill O'Brien, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. If you're listening to this, thank you so much that I don't have to see DeAndre Hopkins twice a year anymore, and neither does anyone else in the AFC South, because Bill O'Brien went out and traded arguably the best wide receiver in the National Football League. Wait for it. For a second-round pick. Now, if Bill O'Brien doesn't deserve a lifetime contract with the Houston Texans, I don't know who does. Because that is a pro move right there. trade away your best player, hope your quarterback can do it without him. That's a pro move. No, but the Texans really screwed this up with the departure of their old GM, Bill Gain, and now Bill O'Brien assumes the role of GM and head coach, which, let's be honest, how many times has this ever worked out? Other than Bill Belichick, how many times has this ever worked out? GM and head coach.
I mean, if you're trading D-Hop and a fourth-round pick for a second-round David Johnson, who had a really underwhelming year, and then a fourth round in 2021, I just – D-Hop wasn't hurt. He wasn't performing badly. He wasn't old. I can't see – I mean – what was his – I don't know what his contract was, but it shouldn't even matter because of all the cap space Houston has. What was it, 33? It's around 30 million. So it's like I genuinely am confused. I'm like, what other issue is there to trade this guy away? I mean, he's 27 years old, has been four-time Pro Bowl, three of the last 3 years got it, three times first-team All-Pro, which were the last 3 years, was the receiving touchdowns leader just a couple of years ago, has some of the stickiest hands in the entire league. Remember last season in 2018 getting zero drops in the whole year? I mean, I'm in the camp
of
better, but
he has
undeniably one of the best wide receivers in the league.
He has to get special custom gloves made for him because his hands are so big that they don't make gloves in that size. That's the kind of receiver that you're getting with DeAndre Hopkins. I'll tell you as a Titans fan, he catches everything. There is no ball thrown within 6 feet of him that he cannot catch. It's ridiculous. And more than that, more than just his weapon as being able to go to him in situations where you need someone that's just going to catch the ball, he is a third down weapon. I remember countless times over the past couple of years, maybe not countless, but definitely a few times over the past couple of years where the Texans have had like a game shifting third down and DeAndre Hopkins is the one to catch the ball on third down and bring the Texans give the Texans a better chance to win. This is just such a mind-boggling move from me. And I get, you know, it's often said, like, the secret of basketball is that it's not about basketball, it's about people. I understand that you want to have a team dynamic there and have, you know, good people inside your organization. But no one else other than Bill O'Brien is saying that DeAndre Hopkins is a problem. When you're the only one saying that someone's a problem, they probably don't have a problem. You probably just have a problem with them.
What is his problem? I mean, think about it. His last game is Houston Texan. His last game against Kansas City. Guess what he did in the last game? Like, what his stats are?
I'm not sure the exact stats, but it's something ridiculous.
9 receptions for 118 yards. And now, mind you, in this game, too, another fun fact about this game we mentioned it was a 24-point lead blown, but they did lose 51-31, making them the only team in NFL history ever to have a 20-point-plus lead and lose by 20. How do you do that? How do you have a 40-point flip?
Let me 40. Give you the same answer that I would give to every other question that surrounds the Texans, and that answer is Bill O'Brien. Because Bill O'Brien is an idiot.
Well, and to be fair, Patrick Mahomes was an absolute magician. I mean, he was 23 for 35, 321 yards and 5 scores, no interceptions. And we'll get to him when we finish up interviews in Kansas City later tonight, but I will give that credit, though, as Mahomes did 100% pull Mahomes and save that game. But yes, Houston still obviously blew that.
And here's the thing with Houston's offense, and I think we can get into positions here in a sec if you want to take that when I'm kind of done with this thought. But the Texans did not get better over the last 2 years. I think the Texans have gotten notably worse. You can look at the addition of Justin Reed as a positive. You can look at, obviously, Deshaun Watson's elevated play as a positive. But overall, I think this defense is getting worse because they don't have that many young guys other than Zach Cunningham and Justin Reed. You really are anchored by two stars, one of whom is aging and can't seem to stay on the field through a year. That's J.J. Watt. And now you've left Deshaun Watson with a horrible receiving core that has no star even close to the talent of DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins has more talent in his left pinky than the entire Texans receiving core combined now.
I wouldn't say that the combination, looking at this, that the combination of Cobb, Fuller, and Stills are terrible or bad. I do not think they're a bad receiving core. I think they're a very average receiving core, but I wouldn't call them bad. I mean, obviously, you're taking top two, top three wide receiver in the entire league versus three guys that are decent. I think they're decent, but as in,
don't forget Brandon Cooks in there either.
Yeah, so like this isn't a bad receiving core by any means. I would not call them bad. I wouldn't call like I would rate them a B minus C plus, but it went from an A minus B plus.
Right, it's a receiving core made up of guys that have not lived up to their potential yet as receivers. And maybe Deshaun Watson is the guy, and maybe Bill O'Brien is the guy to bring that potential out of them. But it's just objectively a bad move, and I know that you agree with this, but this is more stating the obvious, but it's objectively a bad move to trade away arguably your best player, not your most important player. Your most important player is Deshaun Watson, but arguably your best player. And J.J. Watt might be the best player on the Texans, but J.J. Watt has not been on the field that much the last two seasons. So you trading away your best player.
The most consistent player.
For a second round pick and David Johnson when they have three other running backs on the roster who can adequately make up for the production of David Johnson.
And again, I would understand the David Johnson trade more if he played like he did 2 years ago last year. And he was one of the better running backs in the league, but the lack of production down the stretch at the end of it is really what caused his, I guess, stock to fall. But then in turn, why would you trade that much to try to get a guy that's not really going to give that much to your team? Especially when you already have three of the running backs in the roster that are healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, and that's my big question. We can get into some positions now. So the top three safest positions on the Texans, definitely Deshaun Watson, you could say, is the safest. He's currently probably a top five quarterback in football. That's definitely arguable. Yeah. But there is an argument to be made there, which is more than can be said about a lot of these teams before the Texans in the draft. Running back, despite trading for David Johnson, despite the fact that this is not one of their best positions, one of their star positions, they have a lot of talent at this position. Carlos Hyde, Duke Johnson, David Johnson, just to name a few. And so I think running back is definitely a solid position. They will not be looking for any more running backs. But if GM Bill O'Brien is the GM that I think he is, I bet they add one more running back in the draft.
Is Carlos Hyde still on the Texans? I think he's still a free agent, actually.
His contract may have expired.
I think his contract expired. Sorry, I was looking that up because I didn't see his name. Like, the big names I saw was Karen Higdon, Buddy Howell, of course, David Johnson.
Yes, and Duke Johnson. He's a free agent right now. But he did play for the Steelers last year. I mean, the Texans last year.
Yeah, he did.
And to round out our safest positions, J.J. Watt, obviously still among one of the best players in the league when he's healthy. Obviously, those health questions have been an issue over the last couple of years, but nothing is leaning towards J.J. Watt not being a member of the Texans for this foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And he's going to continue to produce as long as he's actually on the field.
And looking at some of the least safe positions, which again for this team, I don't know if you saw this, Noah, but two of their opponents, which of course with NFL scheduling, you of course play your three teams in your division twice for a total of six games. You then have another four games in your conference opponents in the AFC, four games in interconference opponents in the NFC, which for this team is the AFC and the NFC North. So they're going to have to go through the Ravens, the Packers, the Vikings. Tough teams here. Their two conference opponents, based on 2019 division placement, Patriots and Chiefs.
Oh, so yeah, Texans baby. Right now, that's what we love to see from a division
very,
opponent.
Very tough schedule for Houston. And to have that, their three weakest positions coming in, your least safe perhaps. Wide receiver. Wouldn't think we'd be saying this right now, but yes, we've talked about it enough. There's not really much else to say about it, but this team's got to look like an elite wide receiver. Interior defensive line. DJ Reader is now gone. They're going to need some help on the inside. There isn't really too much in here. And interior defensive lineman, I'm just really talking about trying to get a good D tackle. Their current defensive tackles on the list, there really isn't much. There's Eddie Vanderdoes and Brandon Dunn, and that's it. So a pretty light roster for this team at defensive tackles. They got a good slew of defensive ends. Of course, J.J. Watt being one of them, but that's kind of the big thing they need to be able to fix soon. And the last one is offensive guard. Getting Tunsil at tackle was very good. Now they got to fix that guard spot. There's not too much going on there. Zach Fulton, Sinio Calamente, and Max Sharping are your three guards on this team. Nobody really standing out too much out of those. Sharping only playing one season, essentially, in his whole career. Sinio, a good amount. He should be one of their starters, but just sort of not too much. I mean, he's on injury reserve most of the entire season for Houston. Really played much more of his bulk of his career with the Cardinals and the Saints. So, yeah, it's pretty weak in terms of guards on this team. So they need to be able to get somebody in to help boost more of the interior line just to stop Watson from getting sacked so much.
Do you think Laremy Tunsil is a time traveler? He was wearing a mask before anyone else.
Exactly.
So for the 2020 NFL draft, the Texans do not own a first round pick, but of course they got a second round pick, a second round pick.
Wonderful.
For the DeAndre Hopkins trade, which is, I'm watching Jack make a face palm right now. Just an egregious trade. Once again, let's mention that again, Bill O'Brien, GM, way to go. They have two second-round picks, a third-round pick, fourth-round pick, fifth-round pick, and then three seventh-round picks. Excited to see some of those seventh-rounders in the AFC South.
Get that practice squad ready, boys.
In the future, get that practice squad ready, baby. So who are some players that the Texans can be looking for in this draft coming up?
Well, as much as we are making fun of this team, the good news for the Texans, which is genuinely pretty good news, is most of their positions that they need actually are fairly deep in this draft. Which include, again, the big three I'll list again, defensive tackle, wide receiver, guard. We actually have a lot of talent here. Of course, we've talked about endlessly, if you've watched any of our podcasts so far on Exit Interviews, this is a really strong receiver draft. There could be as easy as six or more receivers in the first round. Honestly, I would bet the over on that. So with these wide receivers, looking at them first, Laviska Shenault out of Colorado, Chase Claypool out of Notre Dame, and KJ Hamler out of Penn State kind of seem like the guys around this part they'll be looking for. Of course, all your big-name guys, wide receiver, are going to be long since gone because, again, no first-round pick. And 40th overall is fairly deep in the draft. That 40th overall, of course, Arizona's 57th overall is their own. So if there's one of those really standout wide receivers left, I could easily see that being their first pick. The second pick overall would probably go to a defensive tackle at that point because it's so light and guard, again, is serviceable even though it's not the best. So probably to take a guard over that or a tackle over that. Out of those defensive tackles, another TCU name, Ross Blacklock, would be a good fit in here, as well as Neville Gallimore we've mentioned before with Oklahoma, and then Justin Madubuike for Texas A&M. So three guys out of the, I guess, Big 12 territory, including UA&M, but all guys that have been very big, very strong, and very helpful for their respective teams could be a big impact on a Texans team that, I mean, when you take away J.J. Watt out of that defensive line, it's not strong. And you really got to get somebody else there because they just don't have enough help. And then, again, Tunsil helping out the line was very big. And guards to look at are Logan Stenberg out of Kentucky, Ben Bredesen out of Michigan and John Simpson out of Clemson. Those three guards looking around the kind of size, they will be waiting for the draft. And those three guards are the lower guards. They're in about the 80s out of overall, like all players rankings in the draft. They're in like the 80s throughout the whole thing. So those are the kind of guys we're looking here. Cesar Ruiz is the best offensive guard in the draft. Most are agreeing, as well as Natane Muti, however you say that, right, is from Fresno State. Those two tend to be sort of your top guards. Shane Lemieux. Lemieux. There we go. I just cannot pronounce names correctly. So those three are sort of your top three guys. If they end up choosing a second-round pick, look for those three names. It's very likely to be one of those three guys. But if they don't, look for sort of more of those last names.
Yeah, a guy that I would look for here is Neville Gallimore. I'd look for him at 40 overall. If he doesn't go in the first round, that's going to be an absolute steal at 40 overall. But of course, I hope they don't take him because I don't want to see Neville Gallimore in the AFC South for years to come. I think it's time move on to the Seahawks. What do we got there?
Well, the Seattle Seahawks, once again, were a little bit of a confusing team this year. They've kind of been back and forth on a lot of things since their back-to-back Super Bowl runs in the 2013 and 2014 seasons. And since then, they've been just sort of a solid playoff team, but not really much more than that. They were 11-5 last season, which is a pretty decent record, but their problem was they started 10-2. And then they went pretty south after that, finishing 1-3. But with that, in the playoffs, they ended up going to the wild card and winning a 17-9 victory over Philadelphia. Again, the Seahawks being really one game away from taking a top two seed out of San Francisco. But the 49ers.
One play away, 1 yard away.
It was really incredible how close that was. But 49ers prevailed. I don't really know how, but they somehow did. And the Niners managed to get their way to the Super Bowl while the Seahawks were forced back to the wild card and still won their game at Philadelphia, as everybody predicted, and then ended up losing at Green Bay, which I think I might have had the Seahawks in this game. I really like them here, but Green Bay had a really strong win at home, 23-28 for the Packers, which, of course, we'll get to later today. Some other positive notes about this team. Marshawn Lynch's return was always welcomed, and it was good to see him back in Seattle. The second-round draft pick from Ole Miss and DK Metcalf was a steal, who really talk about Ole Miss wide receivers because both him and A.J. Brown for the Titans we'll talk about later both ended up being very solid for their team. So good on you, Ole Miss, for doing something right. And Russell Wilson was absolutely ridiculous this season. If you're going to name anybody other than Lamar Jackson MVP, I think it's not really a question to hand it to Russell Wilson. He started out 10-2 in his first 12 games. He was pretty much MVP caliber the whole time. Really, really great season for Russell Wilson.
Yeah, and there weren't too many bad moments for this Seahawks team. It was the first time since 2009 that Earl Thomas wasn't on the team and the Legion of Boom was officially dead. But this defense played pretty well at certain points throughout the year. Of course, Jadeveon Clowney was a one-and-done in Seattle. He's not coming back. We'll talk about that later tonight when we get to the Titans. But yeah, overall, a really solid year for the Seahawks and one where Russell Wilson really carried this team. There weren't too many moments where anyone else necessarily, and of course, you got to have everyone step up if you want to make the playoffs. But Russell Wilson seemed like he was stepping up to another level than even the rest of his team at some point. But we really saw the character of this team through that 1-3 finish. And then, of course, in the wild card game against the Packers, that they're going to hang around, but they're not really going to kill anyone. They're not going to beat anyone by a sizable margin. And that was really the theme of this year. A lot of close losses, a lot of close wins. And they just couldn't pull out that final game against Green Bay, of course, with two of the best two-minute drill quarterbacks in the league in Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers, just two very clutch guys. But that can lead us into positions, because the Seattle Seahawks have a franchise quarterback in Russell Wilson. We mentioned it. He played at an MVP level last year. He carried the team at certain points. No issue at quarterback there. At linebacker, Bobby Wagner gets a Pro Bowl and All-Pro nod. Still very, very solid at the linebacker position. No need to go maybe look for a replacement there. And at wide receiver, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf seem like a perfect duo of players that can do different things, because Tyler Lockett, you know, is a smaller, more speed-oriented guy, whereas DK Metcalf, still a very fast, very athletic guy, but maybe not as refined on cuts, but he is absolutely massive. He is a physical specimen, and I think the offset of those two works really, really well together.
Yeah, these strengths in this team are still very strong, and again, I don't think there's that much to say about Seattle, just because we have a lot to talk about the Ravens coming up and a lot with the Texans. Seattle just sort of did what Seattle does, which is have a good 10-win season that you were strong in and you bow out midway through the playoffs. I mean, that's kind of what they did, and that seems sort of more normal for them. To look at some of the least safe positions on this team, though, and sort of what they can sort of fix a little bit more. As you mentioned, Noah, edge rusher is going to be a problem. Clowney was solid for that 1 year, but he's pretty much certainly gone, which now means you got to get somebody. Offensive line, for as good as Wilson was, their offensive line is pretty bad, 27th in the league. Wilson facing pressure on 42% of plays, only qualifying quarterback since 2012 to be over 40. So, yeah, it's a problem. And then lastly, defensive lineman. Jaron Reed was re-signed, but they're going to need some more help down there in the trenches. Again, same kind of problem Houston has, and they're going to have to figure it out. But the Seahawks have a first-round pick, so they can perhaps want to get these one of these stronger guys before they get around to it.
Yes, and the Seahawks have 8 picks in this NFL draft. They go first round, 2 second round picks, third round, 2 fourth round picks, fifth round, and then sixth round. So we want to look at some of the players that they might look for. And I would even add in there that the Seahawks are a prime trade down candidate. We've seen that several times. From this team, they traded down to take LJ Collier last year out of TCU. Go Frogs. But this year, if they do choose to stay in that 28th overall, or are they 27th or 28th?
27th.
So they are 27th overall. If they do choose to stay in that spot, it would be, I think, Zach Bond, Yader Gross-Matos, or Marlon Davidson. They got to replace that Jadeveon Clowney hole, because even though he only had, 3 sacks last year, that's a big presence that you're missing in the run game. And just an every down guy that can really go for it on every play. Some other options, I think Isaiah Wilson or Josh Jones, or even Austin Jackson could be good options across the offensive line. We mentioned how bad this offensive line was last year, and it's a wonder how they had success without that.
And right tackle's that position they need. That's why Isaiah Wilson's probably your number one guy out there.
Yeah, for sure. So Neville Gallimore, we mentioned him earlier, Justin Matabuki, Jordan Elliott, those are all guys that could also go to the Seahawks. And the Seahawks have a tradition of maybe picking a guy we did not necessarily expect at the end of the first round. The end of the first round is a little more of a crapshoot than the beginning of the first round, just because so many of these players are so closely graded on maybe they're a second round talent, maybe they're first round talent. We don't know what these teams grade these players as. But Seattle definitely has a reputation for taking maybe a little bit of an off-the-grid player here.
Exactly. They tend to make it funky. And again, moving down here really isn't that big of a deal for a team that you sort of need more everyman positions. You don't really need any big kind of skill ones. So moving back wouldn't necessarily be that bad, because again, there are a lot of decent DNs, a lot of good tackles, a lot of good D-tackle. It's positions that are just sort of your big man stuff. So I think Seattle can get those fine if not necessarily staying at the highest pick. So to look on after that, we have the team that was probably one of the most intriguing teams to talk about from 2019 is the Baltimore Ravens, a team that has been decent for a while, ever since their Super Bowl winning season behind, which will never stop cracking me up, Super Bowl MVP Joe Flacco. We then, which again, it's just, I don't know how, but he still has it until he dies and even long after. Joe Flacco will always be Super Bowl MVP. But with this team, ironically, was better yet did not reach the Super Bowl, weren't even that close, of course, to Noah's delight, as we will see later on. But best moments, there are a lot of best moments in this season that despite the ending that was obviously not what they wanted, it was a lot of good in this season. They were 14-2 with a ridiculous record, first in the AFC North, pretty obviously, and then only played one playoff game and lost 12-28 against Tennessee, which I can't tell you how they only scored 12 points. It was the first time all season they scored below 20, which was unbelievable.
I'll tell you, son, it was the Tennessee Titans defense coached by Mike Vrabel and Dean Pease's brother.
But looking at the best moments, Lamar Jackson, MVP award champion, I mean, it was nobody else could have won. I mean, we talked about Wilson being up there, but it was Lamar Jackson's to lose from halfway through season on, and he ended up proving it in amazing fashion. So really hats off to a guy that people were all saying not bad for a running back. Well, it sure wasn't bad for a running back. An amazing season from Lamar Jackson and very well deserved. 14-2 finish was the best in all of Ravens history. They were the only NFL team with three Heisman winners on the roster, with Lamar Jackson, Mark Ingram Jr., and RG3, which my, how the mighty have fallen for RG3. They were the only NFL team in 2019 to score 20-plus every single game, and they scored on over 50% of their drives, which is insane. They, again, were the only team in the NFL to do that. Jackson was the second quarterback ever to rush over for over 1,000 yards in a season and then promptly overtook Michael Vick for the most rushing quarterback rushing yards in a season. Another Falcon record that falls, but credit to Lamar Jackson there. By week 15, they had scored more points, which was 430, than any other Ravens team in history, and then clinched their second straight AFC North title. They then also finished with 13 Pro Bowlers. 13, which was tied for the most in NFL history, alongside with the 2007 Dallas Cowboys, which were one of the many Dallas Cowboys teams that ended up being they should have won the Super Bowl and yet lost in the first round of the playoffs. They also had 6 AP All-Pros. Going through those Pro Bowlers, Lamar Jackson, of course, at quarterback, Mark Ingram at running back, Patrick Ricard at fullback, Mark Andrews at tight end, Orlando Brown Jr. at offensive tackle, Ronnie Stanley also at tackle, Marshall Yanda, who actually just retired, at guard, Earl Thomas at free safety, Marlon Humphrey at corner, Marcus Peters also at corner, Matthew Judon at linebacker, Morgan Cox at long snapper, and then one of the best ever, Justin Tucker, kicker. And then AP All-Pro, you got Jackson, Stanley, Humphrey, Peters, Tucker, all first team, and then Marshall Yanda at second team. And to add on to that, they were the number 2 PFF-ranked offensive line of 2019. So very difficult to talk about really anything wrong with this team from the regular season in 2019. The only thing I can think of was that loss to Cleveland. And, I mean, it was a nearly perfect regular season for this team.
Yeah, there weren't really many worse moments. It was their first time since 2002 without Terrell Suggs, no problem there. And first time since 2007 without Joe Flacco, again, no problem there. So there weren't really a whole lot of problems with this team's season. And this is an absolutely stacked roster going forward. They have to be looked at as a Super Bowl favorite next year.
They should be, yeah.
And this is really the first team that we're going to talk about that is considered truly a favorite for the Super Bowl next year. Truly, like, one of the top two or three teams in the league as far as roster and as far as talent. And that can lead us into some safe positions, because at cornerback, they have the reigning MVP. I mean, Lamar Jackson's numbers last year were absurd. He broke Michael Vick's He broke the NFL quarterback rushing record set by Michael Vick. Go Falcons. He needs no introduction. He is safe on this team for years to come. At cornerback, they have two cornerbacks getting both Pro Bowl and AP All-Pro in Humphrey and Peters, so there's no need for change there. They have a very solid secondary. And then this is the first thing we've mentioned this for, kicker, because Justin Tuck is one of the – Tucker, not Justin Tuck. Justin Tuck was a defensive lineman for the Giants. But Justin Tucker is probably the best kicker in football at the moment. He is a historically good kicker, and I see no problem there. And we should mention running back while we're here, because Mark Ingram has been a stellar addition to this year's team, and it really works well with their power running style, offset by Lamar Jackson's, you know, more elusive speed running style. And so I think it's almost like, I mean, I bring this up because it's familiar to me, but smash and dash with the Tennessee Titans when they had Chris Johnson and Lindale White, it's almost like having that, but Chris Johnson is your quarterback because Lamar Jackson is so fast.
And just to mention that again with stats, I didn't mean to mention these earlier, but the team finished the regular season with 3,296 total rushing yards, which is the most by any team in NFL history during a season. So yeah, 3,296. And then also they were the first team in the NFL history to average at least 200 passing yards and 200 rushing yards per game in the same season. I mean, it just wasn't fair. They outscored their opponents by 249 points, which is the highest point differential by any team in 2019. I mean, it just wasn't fair. I mean, that's the thing with this team. They wish weren't fair. And again, that was what was so incredible about their loss to the Titans in the divisional round. It really makes it and hard to figure out. But looking at some of their better moments for who they need to keep, who they need to kick, what they need to do here. We mentioned, of course, safest positions, but looking at the least safe. Now, I have offensive line here, but don't get fooled. Most of this offensive line is totally fine, but Yanda's retirement made that a problem. So really, line is really more focused towards guard. This team needs to get somebody in to replace him because, yes, those were issues with the team. Yanda was very solid for them, but now that that spot is completely empty, you have to fill that in with some solid guys. So look to get someone there. Linebacker also, if there's really any part of this defense you consider weak, it's going to be right in the middle. So linebacker, they're going to need some help. And then edge rusher. Judon was franchise tag and Calais Campbell added, but that is a lot of older guys. And again, Judon with the franchise tag is an uncertain time. And Campbell being a much older player, you're going to need some youth for some long-term help on this team. So look to have some young guy to get in there. Though wouldn't necessarily bet on an edge rusher relatively early for this team because he's almost going to be certainly serving in a backup role. So I would not think to draft an edge rusher early. But I would be pretty surprised with their many picks overall, which I think is a total of nine. So with their nine picks overall, they're almost certain to have an edge rusher somewhere in there. But look for him more in their two fourth round picks.
Yeah, and this is a team that's definitely in win now mode because we saw last season that they're in prime position to win a Super Bowl at this junction in their franchise. And so now they've got to hit on some draft picks to fill those holes to take them to the next level where they can win that playoff game. And the draft will certainly help with that because they have nine picks overall, one in the first round, two in the second round, two in the third round, two in the fourth round, a fifth round, and a seventh round. And so we look at who are some of those guys that the Ravens could be targeting in the first round and maybe on down the line here. Cesar Ruiz is one that comes to mind, and you had it written down. I actually had it in my head before I even read this because he doesn't look like he's going to get taken any earlier. I mean, any team could surprise us just based on where they have him ranked, what they view their team needs as. But Cesar Ruiz is the best interior offensive lineman in this class and would be an absolute steal at number 28. There are just more important positions out there that other teams are going to address that have more problems on their roster than the Ravens at this point. Two players I'd really look for if they were available at 28, which are both long shots, but Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen could both go a long way to help this defense. I was reading Matt Miller from Bleacher Report's big board today, and he has Kenneth Murray as to the Ravens as the best fit for any linebacker in this draft, and I think that's absolutely true. He plays a downhill style that really fits the Ravens' mentality and game plan as they go throughout the game.
And that's what I'm thinking here. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that if Ruiz and Murray are both available, I think you would take Murray. Obviously, if Murray's available, I think that's I know we hate saying this with late round picks, but as close as a lock to a late round pick as you could get with either Murray or Ruiz, I think are their two definite top two targets. If there's no trading or no mess, I mean, saying it's relatively stable, which I'm not, I think it's going to be very unstable in this draft, but saying you go fairly stable, I think Ruiz and Murray would be kind of your two guys to look out for most because you just need those positions so badly. I'm leaning a little more towards Ruiz just because they just had the retirement and they'd want to replace that quickly.
And I think he's more likely to be available there.
I think he would be too because Murray's probably your best interior lineman in this draft if you're going to put him over Queen. So I think Murray would have to be taken because really anybody that really needs interior lineman is going to grab him first if you're at 28th as the Ravens are.
Right, and then looking for some other picks that may come later in the draft. Zach Bond, that's one that they could look at the end of the first round. If none of their other options are available there, I think he would be good, but obviously not a priority as more of an edge rusher guy. Afferny Jennings, defensive end out of Alabama. Jabari Zuniga out of Florida. He is also a defensive end. And then Bradley Ane out of Utah. You got anything else to say about the Baltimore Ravens?
Not too much. Just wanted to let you all know that this is our penultimate podcast of our exit interviews. And later tonight, we're going to be recording our final one. We're going to try to drop those both on SoundCloud, Spotify at about the same time. Try to get back to back. And then for TCU 360 listeners, those will come out probably tomorrow. And then tomorrow we are, as you mentioned, Noah, we're going to get that big podcast out for our mock draft where I'll be going over the NFC teams, you'll be going over the AFC teams, and collaborating up to make what we think is overall our most likely draft that we think the Blanket Coverage podcast will suppose. And then, of course, on Thursday, we're going to watch all of it, and we can watch along and see how much we get right. And then either on Friday or Saturday, some point over the weekend, well, probably more after that.
Sunday.
Yeah, probably Sunday when the draft is over. I forgot what the rounds were. But yeah, once the draft is then concluded, we will have a post-draft podcast, which is probably one of my top podcasts of the year I was looking forward to back when we started this in October was the post-NFL draft one. Just like post-NBA draft too is up there. But of course, whatever in the world is going to happen with that. But with this NFL draft, we are very blessed to have some form of some live sports coming up that really matter this weekend because thank goodness we do get something. Things slowly start to lean back into normalcy over the coming months and year. So exciting to see. Glad y'all are sticking around and hearing this stuff, and always a pleasure.
Thank you for doing our outro announcements, Jack. And thank you, the listener, for listening to the Blanket Coverage podcast on TCU 360. I am Noah Parker from the home studio in Nashville, Tennessee.
I'm Jack Wallace coming out of Atlanta.
Peace.
Peace out, y'all.